Well, we come this morning to the last and the greatest of the signs that Jesus performed and which are recorded in John's Gospel. His great sign of raising Lazarus from the dead. And obviously we have to take as a text verse 25, very, very famous words. John 11, 25. Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die." And the raising of Lazarus from the dead is an active demonstration of this claim on the part of Jesus. These words that he says, "I am the resurrection and the life," in those sayings, that statement is expressed in words, but the same statement is expressed in deeds by this miracle of raising Lazarus from the dead. Let's look first of all at the pattern of the story, and then we'll try and see something of the meaning, the significance of the story. So, the pattern of the story. And I think it's helpful to take it in three stages. First of all, we have a great blessing delayed. A great blessing delayed. It's really extraordinary how the story begins, isn't it? And it's sort of deliberately built up to a tremendous effect. Here's Jesus. We're told that he loves Martha and Mary and Lazarus, and he gets the message that Lazarus is ill. Verse 3, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when he hears this message, Jesus deliberately doesn't go to do anything about it. Verse 6, when he heard that he was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. And it's only when he knows for certain that Lazarus is actually dead that he actually takes steps to go to the place where Lazarus is and do something about it. And as Martha herself underlines in her blunt way, he waits so that Lazarus is not simply dead, but that the process of decomposition has begun. As the RSV somewhat euphemistically expresses it, there's an odour, if you like. Already he's begun to stink. That's the force of it. In other words, he delays deliberately so that he's going to have the chance to perform this sign of raising Lazarus from the dead, and also making quite clear that it's no mere resuscitation of somebody who's gone into a coma. It really is a raising from the dead of somebody who is quite past any possibility of life, humanly speaking. So there is a great blessing delayed. That leads on, obviously, secondly, to the next part of the story, which in a way we've anticipated, a great blessing given. A great blessing given. It's first of all delayed so that when the blessing is given, it may be a greater blessing than it would otherwise have been. If he'd gone at once, he could have healed the illness that Lazarus was suffering from. But he delays that so that when he goes, a greater blessing is given. A great blessing was delayed, but now when he finally arrives, a greater blessing is given. Decomposition has set in, but nevertheless, Jesus summons Lazarus back to life. And there are many little ironies in the way the story is told, and in some of the remarks that the people make. They speak truth without even realizing it. For instance, verse 37, some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Yes, he could. He could have kept him from dying. And if you look at verse 14 and 15, Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I'm glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. You see, in a sense, if Jesus had been there as the Lord of life, it would have been impossible for Lazarus to die. Where Jesus is, death cannot be. So he stays away, and then when he goes, a greater blessing is given. So we have a great blessing delayed, a greater blessing given. And then thirdly, and this perhaps is really the key thing, we have a still greater blessing promised. A still greater blessing promised. Martha says to him in verse 24, I know that Lazarus will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. You don't have to wait till the last day. In me, you can enter into resurrection and life even now. He says two things. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. And he expands those two things with two little statements that follow. I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. That's what's meant by his being the resurrection. Though you die physically, nevertheless you will live. You will be raised after death to life. Jesus is the resurrection. And then he goes on, verse 26, whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. That's what's meant by saying that Jesus is the life. If you have Jesus, he is within you as the life, a spiritual life that can never be extinguished. So that eternal life isn't something for which you have to wait until after death. It's something that begins now and which even death itself cannot conquer or overcome. So whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. He may die in a bodily sense, but spiritually he's never going to die. Now that's the greater blessing promised. Because it's important to see that in a sense, Jesus was a bit unkind to Lazarus. C.S. Lewis, in one of his letters, once remarked that he sometimes thought that possibly Lazarus should be regarded as the first martyr rather than Stephen. Because think what happened to Lazarus. At last he finished this life with its trials, its illnesses. He died of an illness. All that seemed to be behind him, entering into the life in which there will be no illnesses. And he's summoned back to go through it all over again. Poor chap. He's raised from death to life, but he's only going to die again. And no doubt, as well as dying again, he's going to sin again. And therefore, the miracle is important, not in itself. In a sense, the raising of Lazarus from death to life, as I've suggested, in a sense, it's a cruel thing. The importance of it is not what it is in itself, but what it is a sign of. It's a sign that Jesus is the resurrection and the life. It's a sign that if you're his, even if you die physically, you will be raised spiritually. It's a sign that if you are his, you have a new spiritual life that can never be extinguished. Not even physical death will extinguish it. That's what it's a sign of. So there's the pattern of the story. A great blessing delayed, the blessing of healing not given, so that a greater blessing can be given, the blessing of raising from the death, and a still greater blessing promised, Because this is the sign, not just that Jesus can raise somebody from physical death back to physical life, but give that eternal spiritual life that will last forever. So there's something of the pattern of the story. Now let's look a little bit more deeply at the meaning of the story, the significance of it. Because in this story, as in all the stories of John, is the gospel. And the key, really, is in verse 4. When Jesus heard it, when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he said, "This illness is not unto death, it is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by means of it." So that the Son of God may be glorified by means of it. Well, as so often with John, that's a statement that has a meaning on two different levels. On a simple level, it means that Jesus is going to perform this tremendous miracle. And people will see, and some will believe, and all will be impressed. What he does is going to demonstrate his glory. But there is something more than that. What does it really mean for Jesus to be glorified? Well, turn on to chapter 12 and verse 23. Jesus answered them, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." The hour has come. We've so often thought about the hour, haven't we, in these studies in John? The hour is the hour of Jesus' death, resurrection, ascension. It's the hour when his fight with the powers of evil comes to its climax. It's the hour of apparent defeat, but of real victory. And therefore his hour is also the hour of his being glorified. And the hour of his being glorified is the hour of his death. Here is the extraordinary thing, that Jesus is dying, that seems to be his uttermost shame, is his richest and fullest glory. Well, now if you go back to John chapter 11 and verse 4 once more, Jesus says, "This illness is not unto death, it is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by means of it." There is, in other words, a very close connection between the raising of Lazarus and the dying of Jesus. Think about that. There's a very close connection between the raising of Lazarus and the dying of Jesus. There's a very close connection between the raising of you and me and the dying of Jesus. Let me try and put it in two little phrases. Here's the first one. Because Lazarus lived, Jesus died. Because Lazarus lived, Jesus died. It was the commotion created by the raising of Lazarus that, according to John, finally put the wind up the Jewish authorities and made them determine that they must put Jesus to death. Look on to verse 47. "So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council and said, 'What are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on thus, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and destroy both our holy place and our nation.'" Look, we can't let him go on like this. And because of the commotion created by the raising of Lazarus, Jesus dies. Because Lazarus lived, Jesus died. Let's read on in verse, see what Caiaphas said. Verse 49. "One of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all. You do not understand that it's expedient that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation should not perish." And then verse 53, "So from that day on they took counsel how to put him to death." So because Lazarus lived, Jesus died. Now turn that the other way round. Because Jesus died, Lazarus lived. Can you follow that? Because Lazarus lived, Jesus died. The commotion over his raising was the cause of Jesus' death. But it's only because Jesus dies and dies for the sins of everyone that anybody lives. It's only because Jesus died that he is the resurrection and the life, that whoever believes in him, though he die, shall not live, and so on. Only because Jesus died do these things follow. So not only is it true that because Lazarus lived, Jesus died, but also because Jesus died, Lazarus lived. Look at verse 51, which is John's comment on those somewhat cynical and calculating remarks about Caiaphas. Caiaphas, verse 50, says, "You do not understand that it's expedient for you that one man should die for the people and that the whole nation should not perish." Caiaphas says, "Look, it's far better that this man should be sacrificed so that we don't get a rebellion coming up, rather than that the Romans should come along and say, we can't let these Jews carry on anymore and take us all away. One man must die instead of the people." But unconsciously, he's a prophet. Verse 51. He did not say this of his own accord, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for the nation. And not for the nation only, but to gather into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. There it is, you see. Jesus dies instead of everyone, so that anyone who believes in him, instead of dying, may live. And this thought runs the way through, the way the story is told. Look at Jesus being deeply moved. Verse 33. "When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled." Verse 38. "Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb." It's a very powerful word. Really, it means to groan or to snort. It expresses indignation. Why does he feel like this? Because he's coming near to the very portals of gate of death and of the kingdom of death. Coming to the tomb, death spreads its odor, not merely literally, but also metaphorically. There are men and women in bondage and captivity to death, weeping. And the Jews, who see their Savior instead of believing in him, are making captious, critical comments. He's confronted starkly by sin and death. He's come to do battle with them. And he groans in the turmoil of his spirit as he enters into battle with them. Because all this is a foreshadowing of the greater battle that's going to be worked out just in a few days' time on the cross. Another little saying to take up, verse 34. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." I wonder if you can recall that invitation earlier in this gospel, "Come and see." We needn't turn to it, but back in chapter 1, when some of the early disciples came to Jesus, one of them said to him, "Lord, where are you staying? Where do you live?" And Jesus said, "Come and see." and they came to Jesus and entered into the realm of light and life. But now the situation is reversed. Here's a dead man. Where have you laid him? Said Jesus. And they say, come and see. And Jesus comes and enters into the realm of darkness and of death. You see, he is taking our death that we may take his life. Because Jesus died, Lazarus lived. And because Jesus died, you can live. I can live as well. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Both Martha and Mary said that to Jesus. And they were right. Where Jesus is, death cannot be. It is extinguished and defeated. So if we come to Jesus and see where he lives, we enter the realm of light and life. And in order that that might be so, Jesus himself came and saw the realm of darkness and death. He took it in our place in order to extinguish it and dispel it and cast it away. And so he wins the victory. So then we see here a great blessing delayed. Healing might have been given, but it's not. Instead, a greater blessing is given. Lazarus is raised from death. But a still greater blessing is promised. The blessing of a deathless life, a sinless life. And this comes because of Jesus dying. Because Lazarus lived, Jesus died. But it was because Jesus died that Lazarus lived. And because he died, you can live. I can live too.